Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast, with over 6.5 million unique listeners in 180 countries. I'm Jason Henricks, and I'm your host for today. Now, one thing, as an innovator in financial technology, I've come to realize making change is hard and slow. The innovators blame compliance, and compliance blames the regulators. But what happens when the regulators themselves decide to become the innovators? Nick Cook, Director of Innovation for the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK, talks about their successes and challenges to be more innovative, the role of tech sprints, which you really wanted to call hackathons, in changing both the structure and culture of a regulatory body. And then in the second segment, Joanne Barefoot, the US-based hostess of the next FCA tech sprint on financial crimes and anti-money laundering, gives us a sneak peek at her new nonprofit, AIR, the Alliance for Innovative Regulation. Speaking of things that are hard, choosing the right software for your business is both hard and slow. We're pretty tech savvy at FinTech Forge, and we still find it agonizing to sort fact from fiction when it comes to capabilities versus claims. That's where Capterra comes in. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With nearly 1 million reviews of products from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to yoga studio management. Visit capterra.com/fintech for free today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. capterra.com/fintech. Capterra, that's CAPTERRA.com/fintech. Capterra is software selection simplified. Here with Nick Cook, Director of Innovation at the Financial Conduct Authority. Nick, welcome to Breaking Banks. Excited to finally have you on the show. Big fan, both of you and what the FCA has been doing. Maybe as a starting point, well, normally would assume people follow the FCA as a leader in what you've been doing. Can you tell us a little bit about when did the FCA begin its overhaul and what were some of the changes that have been implemented?
Sure. Thanks for having me. Really good to speak to you and great to finally be on the show. We launched our what we call Innovate services, now Innovate activities, back in 2014. And initially that really focused on trying to find ways to enable innovative businesses to better understand the requirements of the regulatory system in the UK and to seek some direct support and some response from us as the regulator about how their innovations and their new business models may be viewed by us as a regulator. So it started very much as an engagement-led piece of work where firms and individuals would come and talk to us about their new innovations, their new ideas. And then over time, we've sort of added to those services and added to our approach. Most high profile, most well known is probably our regulatory sandbox, where we enable testing by firms of their new business models and their new products on real life consumers in UK financial markets, with some controls and some restrictions that we apply. And then we've gone on and built from there, really. So we launched our hackathon events, which we call Tech Sprints, back in 2016 as well. They were mainly focused more on the reg tech side of the market than the fintech side. And then gone on from there to focus more and more on international collaboration and international efforts before really starting to turn the lens on ourselves and looking at how we apply some of the new technologies that underpin fintech and reg tech to ourselves. So it's been an iterative process, a learning process, and we find ourselves about 5 years into our journey so far.
So you recently did a bit of a deep dive on how effective some of the changes were and some of the activities. What did you find? What actually started to move the needle?
Yeah, so we published a report just a couple of months ago looking at the, I think we called it the impact and effectiveness of Innovate. And it's a mix actually, Jason. It's some statistics about the scale of support that we've provided so far. So the number of firms that we've helped, which is closing on 700 pretty rapidly. It looks into the experiences of those firms, particularly whether they've been successful in becoming authorized entities quicker than they would have been had they not had support. And we think there's some good stories there around something like a 40% reduction in time to market for firms that have been supported. We've seen a lot of the firms that have tested in our sandbox securing additional equity funding very soon after, or indeed during their sandbox experimentation. We've seen a lot of new firms come to the market and remain in existence sometime after their sandbox experimentation. So we are seeing viable entities coming through as well. And then we've seen some things that are a bit harder to measure. So some of them are just some quantitative metrics that are quite easy to observe. Some of the things that are a bit harder to measure are, what is the incumbent response? So when we see an innovator attempt to disrupt or enter a market, offering perhaps a new service or a new feature to consumers, we're now starting to observe incumbents responding to those and offering similar services. I think some of the most obvious examples have been in the insurance space in the UK, but also in things like the retail banking side of things, where we've seen large incumbents offering new spending controls and price controls over what their consumers can do with their accounts, which were things we originally saw very much more in the startup community. So the report goes through a number of different metrics. There are some things we are still finding hard to measure, and not least because we're only a few years into this journey. But the report is public, and I welcome people to take a look.
Was there anything that was a surprise to you that it didn't move the needle more or move it faster?
I think the thing that I'd probably like to see move a bit faster is some of the scale impacts. So we have some very large incumbents and institutions in the UK, as you do in the United States. And, these markets take a while to modernize and to disrupt and to innovate. And so we have seen the market being nudged, but perhaps not moving as fast as one might expect. I think the other thing that there are certain types of experimentation and innovation that we haven't seen as much as we would have hoped. So one example there has been that the UK has a strong interest in a move towards a greener economy, and new financial services and products and offerings coming to market to support that. But for our more explicit statement that was the kind of experimentation we wanted to see more of, we weren't really seeing very much in that space. So there are some areas where I'd like to see more. I think we'd like to see more scale implementation of RegTech solutions as well. So we're still seeing that market to be quite a challenging market in the UK, where there's lots of interest, but large-scale adoption and meaningful adoption is still somewhat slow at the moment.
Yeah, that is one of the biggest challenges, and the advantage of the incumbents is, they do have scale. The downside of having scale is it can be exceedingly difficult to move, and your motivations to move can be, very different. If you have existing customers who are willing to pay you for what you do, it's easy to espouse, go cannibalize yourself, but shareholders don't always agree with that. Where do you find that, is the incumbents just slowness? Is it the financial aspect? What do you think keeps them from moving faster?
I think it's a number of things. I think it's that, as you rightly point out, with any large business, you have a natural inertia that comes from a risk aversion from making major changes that may disrupt your relationship with your stakeholders, be that your shareholders, be that your regulators, be that your customers. So there's a natural inertia that creeps in with large scale. I mean, many of the institutions, as you will know, have very, very complex legacy infrastructures that are hard to deploy niche solutions into. And I think that's something we've certainly observed in the RegTech market. A lot of at least the first phase RegTech companies were offering point or niche solutions to specific parts of the value chain. And actually the cost of deploying that onto existing infrastructure outweighed the benefit of that you would realize from that lease deployment. So I think we haven't seen as many kind of full stack or full value chain offers in the RegTech space as you might need to see. I think also there's probably a bit of change inertia for some institutions. It's been a very busy period for a lot of institutions dealing with political, regulatory, and economic change, and making desirable consumer-facing or risk management-facing changes can be quite difficult when you've had an organization that's been going through a very long period of sustained change, and I guess there's probably a bit of a risk of some burnout, actually, in some of the institutions. Mm. And then I think there's the other thing that one can't forget is obviously the global nature of many of the large institutions, and not all jurisdictions have necessarily been able to or been willing to provide safe space for experimentation and innovation. And if you're a large institution, your preference clearly would be to deploy these new solutions across markets and in multiple jurisdictions. And not all of them necessarily feel they have the space or the support to do that. So I guess that's certainly holding back some as well.
Yeah. Now, speaking of changing the pace, regulators are not known, and this is a global phenomenon, for moving fast. Yet one of the things that you referenced, the FCA implemented this idea of doing a tech sprint. Can you share a little bit about where that idea came from and how has that evolved?
Sure. So, a tech sprint to many of your listeners shares a lot of characteristics with a hackathon. And so the idea came from two places. One, an observation that the fintech market and the technology market generally was involved in a lot of these rapid prototyping experimental events where they brought multidisciplinary groups together to try and solve a shared problem or a shared use case. So we were seeing that as a template model, if you like, for a type of event that we could get involved in or could run. And then secondly, when we kicked off our RegTech work back in 2015, the first thing we did really was to engage with the market and say, well, what role should we play? This is a new technology world that we're unfamiliar with. What is the most valuable thing for us as a regulator and policymaker to do? And the feedback was very strong that we should leverage our natural convening authority and bring groups together around common use cases where progress has been slow. So tech sprints were born out of there. We would have called it a hackathon if I'd been allowed to do so, but my senior decision makers at the time felt that sounded like an illegal event because of the word hack. So we called it tech sprints, which has been actually very helpful because we've created something of a brand that's associated with the FCA and its innovation work. And they started really small. The first one back in 2016 was 25 to 30 individuals from 5 or 6 institutions who were hacking together solutions in the financial access space, looking at how you might use biometric ID and how you might use alternative credit scoring systems and various other things to unlock access for the unbanked and the underbanked. And then we've built from there. We're building up to our 7th tech sprint this summer. And as a high watermark, our one last year had at its peak nearly 600 people involved in it from 150 companies, from a couple of dozen countries, tackling some really complex challenges and issues for the industry around financial crime. So they've built in terms of scale and complexity and impact. But at their core, they remain very much like a hackathon event where a group come together and try and work collaboratively to hack and solve a long-standing problem.
Now, I've got to think this is not like your prototypical hackathon where it's a bunch of tech geeks eating pizza and energy drinks all night and all weekend kind of working on something. Who are the types of...
You might be surprised.
Who are the types and firms, you know, and people who participate, you know, in this? Is it like teams coming from large organizations? You know, who comes?
It's a real mix. We certainly have our fair share of pizza eating, energy drink swilling individuals that come along. But it's a mix. What we try and do is create multidisciplinary teams that cover everything from your front-end developers through to your infrastructure engineers and your software developers. We've created a number of different personas and roles that we think make a team a success. So we have individuals in the team who are just great at the pitch and at delivering a summary of the product to the audience at the end. We have others that are subject matter experts, some of whom float between the teams, giving input on the problem statements, the use cases, the regulatory and legal considerations and requirements, et cetera, to help make sure that the prototypes are fit for purpose and appropriate in the regulated space. We have everyone from regulated firms, big and small, who send data scientists or subject matter experts along, through to some of your biggest household names in the technology world who provide both highly capable researchers and teams, and also infrastructure support for the tech sprints. And then a real and incredibly varied mix of startups from the tech community, the fintech community, and the regtech community, all brought together with regulators, policymakers, lawyers, and others. So it is a more diverse and, I guess, in that sense, unusual group than you'd find in your classic tech hackathon. But ultimately, the reason we've done that is to try and make sure that the tech that's developed is appropriate and meets the needs of the specific audience that we find ourselves with in the regulated space.
Let's talk about some of the results that came out of this last financial crimes. What were some of the winning solutions that were out? And did they actually make it into any kind of production environment?
So they're being developed currently still. So getting them into production, to go back to our earlier conversations about the challenges of making real progress here, going from a prototype and a tech sprint to a production deployment is still a challenge, and we'll freely admit that. But, I mean, they focused on a number of things, really. Well, what we didn't enable them to do was to assume any change in the access to data that an institution would have available for financial crime prevention purposes. So most of the solutions look to either how do you move from a sort of rules-based transaction monitoring approach to one that is enhanced by a more machine learning driven, hypothesis driven approach. So they looked at replacement of existing rules-based systems with those hypothesis driven systems. Mm. Or they looked at the challenges firms face around know your customer and customer onboarding, and particularly things like identifying linkages between corporate entities and individuals, and particularly looking at how you'd identify those kind of patterns and linkages in a cross-border context. So they were really trying to tackle the question of how do you consume open source and commercial intelligence alongside the information you have available to you within your institution to understand who it is you're dealing with and some of the risks and issues they may present to you from a financial crime point of view. And then there was the kind of the third set. So there was the improvements to the transaction monitoring, the improvements to KYC and customer onboarding. And then the third piece was basically the teams that ignored that we said, don't assume you can have access to more data, and instead said, well, if we could, how might you do that? And so they started to explore how you'd build common solutions between market participants that leveraged, I think in the last tech sprint, the main new technology that was zero knowledge proof. So we just saw this glimmer, frankly, in the last tech sprint of how what are collectively referred to as privacy enhancing technologies, how they may more meaningfully nudge the dial in terms of financial crime detection and prevention. So we saw, I think it's about 16 groups in the last tech sprint. Four or five were taken forward into further development of their proof of concept. Some of those are still in development today. And what the tech sprint really did in terms of an outcome was tell us that the thing to focus on was how to enable legal exchange of data between institutions, and to really focus on that part of the problem statement for this next tech sprint that we've got in a couple of weeks' time.
Wow. So tell us a little bit more about the upcoming tech sprint, and how could people get involved?
Sure. So the upcoming one kicks off in about 3 weeks. And it's, as I say, it's a slightly more specific one. So it's really focusing on bringing together privacy-enhancing technology experts from around the world to explore how these frankly, relatively nascent technologies could be applied in the financial services context, particularly to financial crime use cases. So we have a number of teams coming in from around the world, and we're anchoring the team around a specific privacy enhancing technology. And your listeners and others, I think it's next Monday, so the 15th of July, we'll be announcing all of the teams and participants that are going to be involved in the tech sprint. But we've got so groups coming in from around the world who are going to hack for a whole week, actually, for this one. It's a longer event. But then we're also running, for the first time, a couple of satellite events, one in Washington, D.C., and one in Nairobi, Kenya, all being well. And those groups will do a mix of things. Some of them will focus on the same use cases as London, looking specifically at privacy enhancing technologies. And some of them will try and build on some of the use cases and technologies we saw at the last year's tech sprint. And the idea really is to grow this global international network effort to try and defeat and combat the very organized network that we see in financial crime. So we have policymakers, law enforcement agencies, government officials, regulated firms, technology companies from all walks of life, coming to London, coming to Washington, and coming to Nairobi to try and look at how to apply these new technologies in a collaborative sense. In terms of how people get involved, it's a little bit late, actually. To be honest, there's still some seats available for some of the demo days, I think, particularly in Washington. And there will be significant social media coverage of the event. We'll be videoing some of the bits of the event and putting out some material afterwards. There'll be a white paper about privacy enhancing technologies to come in the autumn, and various other bits and pieces. So lots and lots of information that we'll release, and hopefully we'll come back on your show and do a bit of a post-event summary as well.
Yep, we're going to hopefully have some of the participants on and maybe some of the winners as well, going to do a whole show dedicated to what comes out of one of the more exciting and innovative things happening in the regulatory world and privacy, you know, hot topic these days, but awesome to see how you have really built up that global network and what's going on.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And they can do a much better job of explaining the technologies to you than I can. So that would be perfect.
Well, we might need a more qualified tech host of the show, because I think, you know, as you were describing those roles on the teams, I'm like, yeah, not me. I ended up on the, I would be the guy going to get the pizza and the energy drinks. That would be my role on the team.
Perfect. That's an important role.
It's a very important role. Up all night doing that one. Now, it's interesting, as you've described, you know, the nature of the work and approach to the work has really changed. This idea of a global approach and a tech-driven approach. It makes me think of, you know, a talk you did for the bank executives around the challenge in changing the agency. And you really dug into culture. Now, particularly compliance and, a culture of compliance, it normally means go follow the rules. Or at least that's what I took away from all of the training that I had to do within banking. When you talk about changing the culture and building that culture, what do you mean?
Yeah, so I think in the same way that, as you articulate, a lot of compliance areas of institutions focus on following the rules, and naturally, therefore, as organizations become quite cautious and become quite to some extent can stagnate a little bit in their innovation and their creativity. Regulators are not distinct from that risk as well. We make rules, we make policy, we enforce the law, and those activities, rightly, are approached with a degree of conservatism and caution and not always the highest pace. And yet, we face a profound challenge as a regulator that the markets and the firms that we're supervising are modernizing and evolving at a very fast pace. And we need to make sure that our ability to supervise and to monitor those markets and to intervene where appropriate keeps pace with that. And so, and in the UK context, at the FCA, we supervise nearly 60,000 firms, which is a sizable task. And so we've made a very conscious decision that we will need to and will choose to be a more data-led and analytics-led regulatory agency. And we will look to modernize and adapt some of the skill sets and some of the resources we have available to ourselves in order to realize that goal. But in order to do that, we need to make sure we're attractive for the kind of new skills and capabilities that we require. And putting it very bluntly, in some cases we're not. We don't necessarily have the working practices. We don't necessarily have the chance to be creative and dynamic. We don't necessarily have a culture that rewards iterative learning and failing in experimentation and taking the learnings from that and moving forward. And so we have to think really carefully as an organization about how do we make ourselves attractive to the skill sets we require? How do we change our external brand image with some of the groups we're seeking to bring in? How do we cope with things like changes to the expectations of millennials when it comes to the workplace? Not just the physical environment that they're looking for, not just the team environment or the social environment that they're looking for, but also the fact that they may well have in mind a portfolio career, a career where they move around from different institutions and they float through different sectors over time and they don't necessarily bed into an organization for a long period of time. We have to really think about how do we get the best out of those people in a relatively short period of time? How do we make our offer attractive and exciting and inspiring for them so that they come and choose to apply their skills here? And how do we get the best out of them for what might be a short period of time, actually? And then they may move on either into regulated institutions or elsewhere. So there's a whole lot of things we have to consider around the environment, our offer, our brand, how we treat people, how we communicate with our different audiences, and how we effectively tweak over time the skill sets and the resources that we have available to us.
Yeah, on one hand, the idea of a portfolio career with, you know, a large base of experience outside, or, you know, a high performer that's willing to forego a Google, an Amazon, an Alibaba, you know, for a shorter period of time, you know, that could be very attractive. But on the flip side, you know, more often than not, there is real value to the length of time you spent within regulation, because it gives you the depth of knowledge you need, you know, to really understand broadly. You bring up such an interesting challenge of not just managing those people, but how do you get the best out of them?
How do you partner them up with the right people as well? I think that's the other thing. I think if you're looking for a data scientist, let's say, with deep regulatory experience, then we and many, many institutions in the world will be hunting those same people. But if you can find ways where your culture supports really effective working between deep domain experts who understand regulation and some of these new skill sets, and you can provide environments where both of those groups flourish and enjoy working together collaboratively, then you've got a chance. But I think trying to find those Goldilocks individuals who have all of the skills in one tidy package means we'll be competing in a very, very aggressive market.
Now it's time for a short break. Thank you, Nick Cook from the FCA, and follow the new RegTech Sprint at #FCASprint. After the break, we're going to have Joanne Barefoot, who serves as the host for the DC portion of the RegTech Sprint. Now, don't forget, check out capterra.com/fintech. Capterra, it is software selection simplified. I can tell you as a user, it makes life a lot easier as you sort through the fact or fiction of claims versus capabilities in your software selection. And now, a very short break.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
So excited to have Joanne Barefoot. Now, if there was maybe the godmother of reg tech and regulatory reform in the U.S., I'm pretty sure that's you, Joanne, and excited
you know, to have you. I love that.
You heard it here first, folks. And so in the first half of the show, we had Nick Cook talking about the reg tech sprint that's going on, and you are leading the U.S. satellite version of that. I'm curious to hear, you know, this concept of the tech sprint and the approach and how this is all coming together. I'd love to hear your vision of that.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be on the show, and we're thrilled to be working with the FCA on the U.S. Site for the upcoming anti-money laundering tech sprint. I'm sure Nick explained to anyone who didn't know that a tech sprint is a hackathon. He may not have said, but they say to me that since they're regulators, they avoid the word hack. And but it's a format that the FCA invented, maybe 3 years ago or so now, and is a real innovation by regulators themselves on how they're going to learn faster, how they're going to collaborate differently, and how they're going to accelerate creation of actual solutions in the reg tech space that can do better, not just in money laundering, but really across the board in the things that financial regulators need to deal with. So I participated in last year's tech sprint in London last May on AML. It was a fantastic event. My podcast show, Barefoot Innovation, has an episode I did right at the end of it with the leaders of it, which is one of my favorites that we've ever done. And then this year, they were interested in, so we have a lot of regulators from all over the world who are going to go to the London event, as I'm sure Nick said. And then the U.S. in particular is sending a lot of people. I think 6 from the U.S. went last year. This year, they're going to be far more. But there were more still who wanted to go. And so the FCA talked with us and suggested that we collaborate in having us host an event here. I've just launched a new nonprofit called the Alliance for Innovative Regulation, or AIR, and this is its first project, and we're really excited. We have tremendous turnout from the regulators and a whole cross-section of players from law enforcement to fintechs and regtechs and banks and academics.
Yeah, I'm curious. So how is it going to work? You're hosting the satellite, will be in D.C. Is everyone coming to a single location for the week? How's it going to play out on the satellite side?
Yes, there's also a site in Nairobi, Kenya, as well. And the Washington site is going to be a day shorter than the one in London for various reasons. But we are going to have people together for the week, starting on Tuesday and finishing on Friday. And we'll be starting with hackathon teams that will be using the data sets that we're sharing with the FCA group. And they will be defining AML problems to solve. And then the format is we'll have the subject matter experts teamed up with the tech people and software engineers. And we're going to transfer the wisdom and insight from the subject matter experts into the code wizardry of the tech people. And by the end of the week, we'll have code. And the teams will, in London and in the U.S., will be presenting briefly their proposals, and we'll have judging and prizes. The FCA has a whole system planned for how the winners can go on from there. This is our first tech sprint in the United States, and we don't have that formalized, but we will be looking at the London events live from Washington. We're going to have the Washington site on Friday keynoted by the FDIC chairman, Yellen and McWilliams. And as Nick may have mentioned, we'll have the U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, Marshall Billingsley, at the London site as well. And the two groups will both be able to see both of those speeches. So we're hoping to build a and a sense of virtual community across the teams and the people who come on the final day to see the culminating events of it.
Yeah, and listeners can follow along at the hashtag FCA Sprint on Twitter. If you can't get the live video feed, and again, if you missed the first half of the show, we are going to have the winners of the Tech Sprint on a show later in the summer to discuss about how they approached the problem and what their solution was and some commentary. Joanne would love to have you back on, you know, why they won. Now, this is a great first project for AIR. Can you tell us a little bit more about the vision of AIR and what other sorts of things it could do?
Absolutely. So we've created AIR because we've come to a moment where the opportunity exists to transform financial regulation through technology, just like we're transforming everything else. I've worked in this regulatory space for decades, and you know, it's full of people who think it can't change because it's hard to change it. It's got, you know, politics, and it's got, in the United States, we have multiple agencies, and the agencies, I'm a former bank regulator myself, the agencies are risk averse and careful by intention. You know, that's a feature, not a bug, of how we've designed these regulatory agencies. But now they're going to have to speed up. Our regulatory processes and policymaking and thinking are going to have to move faster because we've moved into a period of exponentially changing technology in the financial sector. And if the regulators can't begin to change at an exponential rate as well, they're just going to lag behind. The risks are going to multiply. So it's not anybody's fault that this is difficult. We were living in the analog age and only had so much information and so much technology. Now we're in the digital age. So AIR is going to help catalyze and shape a conversion of the regulatory system for finance from analog to digital design with much more data, sophisticated analytics, and the ability to think about, I mean, your listeners know this, but if you think about the difference between a traditional camera with film versus what we do with pictures today on our cell phones, that's what we need to do. We need to get the information in the financial regulatory system into digitized form so that people can find it, look at it, analyze it, understand where it came from, and all of that. And it's a long project. It'll take years. Some of it will take decades. But we are working on an effort to begin to figure out what should that blueprint look like, not just directionally, but what are the attributes of a better system? Who needs to be engaged in how to build it? And we have seed funding from the Flourish Omidyar Network and other funding as well. And we're really looking at how we can enable, again, a transformation of regulation so that finance can do all the good things it's supposed to do in people's lives. Be more inclusive, be more fair, be more transparent, be lower in friction and difficulty all the way across.
So who should be getting involved with AIR, and what does membership look like? If someone wants to learn more, is it internal, like do individuals join, do institutions join? You know, what sorts of people should be getting involved?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So it's not a member organization per se, but we are building what one of our early collaborators has called the Air Force, people who are getting involved. We also have a very, very distinguished board and advisory board that we'll be announcing sometime soon. But the we don't even have our website up yet, but people can come to my website, which is jsbarefoot.com, and get information there, and we will soon be launching the rest of the site. The Tech Sprint actually came up a little before we were ready to launch, and so we're sort of scurrying to get both of them done at the same time, but AIR will be fully up and running soon. And people can work with it in lots of ways. We're going to be putting out thought leadership. We're going to be doing a lot of convenings. You know, half the secret to this is just bringing the right people together into the room at the same time. We're so siloed in traditional finance and financial regulation. In the United States, we have the problem that Washington is our regulatory center and San Francisco has been our tech innovation center, and they're so far apart and the people don't know each other, which is not true in places like London and Singapore where they do know each other. So we're figuring out how to put all that together, and we're going to be trying to, in, among other things, be a platform for people to connect with each other, undertake projects. We're going to run what we're calling a policy accelerator and try to do some proof of concept types of projects that help people explore and look at what they're doing. I might mention, too, we have a sister organization already up and running called the FinReg Lab with the same basic backers. And it is run by Melissa Coide and is doing research on these regulatory policy questions, just about to come out with an important first paper on using alternative data and credit underwriting. And between us, we're trying to get people to look at new ideas and empirical information on what really works, what are the risks in all this. Obviously, there's a lot of risks and difficulties in a transition like this, and we need to tackle those and not just sit around worrying about them.
And one of you bring up an interesting dynamic. There's one part about the speed of discovery and the use of data to really bring to the surface issues. But how do we tackle the problem of the, so what do we do about it once we find it? You know, because it's one thing to discover, it's another thing to actually be productive in the response. What do you think we need it, you know, as a system to address it, to actually reduce that to practice?
So let me mention that we are producing in the near future a white paper on what this system should look like. We are affectionately calling it a RegTech manifesto. Not sure if we'll keep that name on it for the long term, but that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put out a statement with a lot of input from very, very smart people on what kind of a system we should build. And the heart of it is getting the data into digitized form and then being very sophisticated and thoughtful about how to use AI and machine learning to look at the patterns. You know, most of what the regulatory process does is, and currently we're doing it mostly with humans, is we're looking for patterns of emerging risk, of noncompliance, of potential mistreatment of customers, of financial crime. That's a huge area of which, again, this whole text frame is on financial crime. I'm sure Nick has talked about the fact that the UN says we catch less than 1% of the global financial crime. That's because we don't have the data and the analytic capability to pool it and look at it. And that's what this tech sprint is going to solve for. But that ability to let the machines look at the big patterns and direct them, the human eyes, toward understanding what's going on and what needs a closer look is critical. In the United States and in many regulators around the world, there are many countries around the world, the securities regulators are already using AI to look for signs of market misconduct, anomalous behavior by traders, potential insider trading going on, and to take the scarce resources that we have in our human experts and let them go take a closer look to see if something merits attention. And that's part of what we're going to need to do. And I'll mention too, we just to make this really flourish, we're going to collectively have to figure out how to get the system into a cloud environment safely and securely and bit by bit. None of this is going to happen in one swoop, but that when we can get it into the cloud environment, Nick Cook said something to me one time that I quote all the time, which is that the price of not being in the cloud environment is not being able to innovate. You've got to be in the cloud so you can just deck your computing power against your what it is you want to try out. And then we need to create a safe space. And the tech sprint is one of these for experimentation and testing and trying things out. You can't innovate unless you can try things out and let some of them fail. And we have to figure out how to do that safely in a regulatory and compliance environment.
Well, and you know, there's something about the cloud as well, building on your picture analogy, which is a really interesting one, that without it being really cloud-based, how do you enable sharing? Because so much of, you know, the crime and why we catch so little is the criminals exploit the cracks between the systems.
Exactly.
Hadn't thought about, you know, without being able to have it in the cloud and to have that collaboration. And, you know, privacy is definitely an issue to be solved there. But if we don't start to make the moves in that direction, you know, we've stacked the deck against us.
Absolutely.
So one of the other challenges we talk about quite a bit, so there's structural challenges and technical challenges. There are privacy challenges. There are also cultural challenges. And I know that this is something you talk about quite frequently. How do we begin to address the fear of change and change the culture of compliance in one where, as you had pointed out, some things will have to fail? And that's not something, you know, compliance officers are set up to embrace.
Yeah, exactly. So again, I say this with the greatest possible empathy for the people working in the space. It's easy to theorize that we should all do things differently, but if you're accountable for compliance, or if you're a regulator accountable for keeping the system running properly, you have to think hard. But we have to achieve this culture shift anyway. And the first piece of it is really, frankly, just getting people thinking about what can be done. It's the education part, honestly, is half the battle, because people are sitting in these banks and financial companies and regulatory agencies using old technologies, kind of taking them for granted. And meanwhile, all around us, we have great technology in our lives. You know, I'm going to get on a plane tomorrow night and watch my favorite Netflix shows on my iPad. I couldn't even have done that when 2 years ago or something like that. You know, technology is changing everything, and it's going to change regulation too. So as people think about that and get educated on what can be done, they want to see the change. The superiority of these newer tools, we like to use the term digitally native. There's an emerging class of digitally native regulation and compliance solutions that were never, they never lived on paper. They were born digital, and therefore they're highly efficient and effective and able to constantly improve and so on. So that's the first piece. The other thing that I find is that people in the space respond to two arguments on this. One is recognizing that with these new tools, once we get there, we can have a win-win in which everyone will be happier, because we will both have better regulatory and compliance results and lower costs. There's a massive opportunity to cut costs in this system. And when I say that, I don't mean that jobs are going to go away. I mean, people are going to get allocated from the semi-clerical tasks that are going on in every agency and every financial institution today, and able really to bring their expertise to solving these important problems that are underlying our regulatory work. We want consumer protection. We want fairness. We want non-discrimination. We want to catch the money launderers, and we don't have the tools. So there's an opportunity to do that and do it at much lower cost than in the past. The other thing that I find is that there's a whole nother group of people, or at least a whole nother side of the argument, that's really more beginning to realize how much risk there is if we don't change. I've heard Nick actually say this in public at conferences. We're approaching the point where the regulators will be criticizing banks for not using new tools, because they are going to have inferior tools and they're not going to be finding the problems that they have. And for regulators, if you picture that exponential change, again, try to picture a chart that's showing exponential change and it has that hockey stick shape. So you go along for a long time and it looks like things are just changing very slowly. And then all of a sudden it doubles and doubles and doubles again, and it turns vertical. And we have entered onto that vertical part of the curve. And if you picture that graph and you picture your organization below and to the right of that curve, you didn't change fast enough. We should think of this as missing the turn. Everybody else has gone into new technology, and some organizations didn't, and they're not going to be able to keep up, not in their products, but also not in their risk management. And so when people think about that, that it's getting riskier to hold still than to move, even if you're not totally sure what to do, then we're making progress.
Yeah. I mean, back to your earlier point, some of this is foundational, right? It, when you realize the curve is going exponential and you now decide you need to get your data in the cloud, it's too late. You're just not going to keep up. You need to be developing those digital muscles, those innovation muscles, to even have a chance.
This is the nature of exponential change. I've been making speeches on this point, and people have told me it's the thing they keep thinking about afterwards. We know that some things have this pattern. We can see the change in plain sight, but we underestimate how fast it's coming at us. And you reach a point where it's too late. I'm myself a cancer survivor. You know, cancers have this pattern in many cases where there's a long time when you can take care of them, and then there's a point where it's too late. Not that I would compare technology change to cancer, obviously, but, you know, just so many things like that. You've got a certain amount of time to prepare and move. Speeding up is the most important thing that people have to embrace. And it's hard to do that if you're not sure what to do. And that takes us to the other critical culture shift that needs to occur. And that's back to what we were saying before about creating safe spaces for testing and trying things. You can't have innovation if you can't try things out and learn from failure and feed that back into a next thing that you're trying out. And it's so hard to do that in the regulatory space. We at AIR have a legal memo being written by the law firm Buckley on impediments that are facing regulators in the United States in their own innovation efforts, just due to some of the old laws and procedures that they have to follow, which are all there for good reason. But if you can't run a pilot test or you can't procure new technology in a method where you can test it before you buy it, that kind of thing. You know, it's really, we're just so tied down by things that make it all slow. And we're going to have to figure out how to go faster. And the key to that is to allow experimentation, but keep it inside a safe, ring-fenced zone where the impacts are being monitored. If any harm is done, you can fix it. And you can learn from it, but you still have to allow it to go on. And the regulators are increasingly doing this themselves and encouraging the industry to do it as well. But it's very early days with that.
Fantastic. I think we're going to have you back for another conversation about sandboxes and creating safe spaces as well. So if people want to learn more about AIR until the website is up, where should they learn about joining the Air Force?
Come to www.js, as in Susan, barefoot.com.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure that is out on Twitter as well. Thank you to the fairy godmother of all of RegTech, Joanne Barefoot. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jason. It's been great.
Thanks to our guests this week, Nick Cook and Joanne Barefoot, both helping to hack regulation and compliance culture for good. Follow the upcoming RegTech hack on Twitter at #FCASprint. Special thanks to Capterra, not only for being a sponsor, but for helping me make heads and tails of project management software selection this last week. Check them out at capterra.com/fintech. As always, we do appreciate your comments, suggestions, and questions, and you can find us on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. Let us know if you're interested in sponsoring a show or a segment. Our sponsors make the show possible and often provide some of the best content. Now, if you like the show and want to support us in your own way, just give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. That really helps new listeners find the show. If you want more, you can download and listen to any of our more than 300 shows from Breaking Banks and our other shows like FinTech 5, Serial Entrepreneur, and Breaking Banks Asia with Simon Spencer, all at provoke.fm. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week at Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.